Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. One congratulatory phone call from Taiwan to Trump Tower, and everybody's talking about the U.S.-China relationship. On the campaign trail and since, Donald Trump has said it's going to change. But who holds the cards here if it comes to trade tension, or worse? This hour On Point, Donald Trump and the U.S.-China balance of power. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Was Donald Trump right to take the call from Taiwan? Can the U.S. still call the shots here? Really? Even close? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's go first to Beijing today. Joining us is Simon Denyer. He's China Bureau Chief for The Washington Post. Simon, thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure, Tom. Hello.
Hello. The first reaction to Donald Trump's conversation with the leader of Taiwan was rather muted. How has that evolved in the days since, Simon?
Well, I think it's still rather muted, to be honest with you. There was an editorial on the front. And it was really very, very reasoned, you know, what you might call a rather measured response. And but it was important, you know, that Trump wasn't ignorant. He just had a one-sided view, and dialogue was needed so that he got a more complete picture of U.S.-China relations. You know, that's not to say China doesn't object to what's happening. This is a big deal, and they have, as you said, lodged what they call a solemn protest. But overall, I think the reaction has been more restrained than some people expected.
What about from the public? Can you tell? Is there a social media response to Trump's conversation and the government's reaction to it?
Well, there's an awful lot of outrage always about various here in every country, and there are a lot of nationalists on social media in China. But again, I think that from what we've seen of the reaction on social media, there has been, of course, some anger and concern and pushback, not just to the people, but also to Donald Trump's tweets following the call. But again, you know, not as severe, not as outraged as some people imagined.
Simon Denyer, our line is just too rough. I'd love to pursue it with you there in Beijing, but we'll have to do it another time with a better line. I really appreciate you being with us for a moment here. China Bureau Chief for The Washington Post, Simon Denyer. Let me turn to Washington and David Lampton. He's Professor and Director of China Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, Chairman of the Asia Foundation, author of Following the Leader, Ruling China from Deng Xiaoping to Xi Jinping. David Lampton, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Good to be with you, Tom.
What do you make of this rock in the pond or pebble in the pond, Donald Trump's call with Taiwan? First, could you just remind us why that was a big deal?
Well, I think it's a big deal because for 40 years, the United States and China have had a very precise sort of dance they do in managing the triangle between Taipei, Beijing, and Washington. And this phone call violates sort of the etiquette and protocol that's been established over a long period of time. So in China's minds, particularly because I suppose Mr. Trump is fairly unpredictable from their point of view, they wonder what this signals. If it was just a bureaucratic foul-up, which I think it was not and which everybody says it wasn't, that would be one thing. If it's an attempt for Mr. Trump to get leverage over the Chinese on other issues, they could probably understand that. If it's an attempt to or a foreshadowing of a change in policy, then they're truly alarmed. So I think that this ambiguity in what Trump is trying to tell the Chinese is some explanation for their cautious response, as Simon pointed out a few moments ago.
Is there a piece of paper somewhere that says the American president shall not call or speak with the leader of Taiwan, or is it a more subtle understanding? Describe the origins of that.
It's a more subtle understanding that worked out after President Carter and Deng Xiaoping normalized relations in late 1978, and it took effect on January 1st, 79. These are not written down, and there are other sort of protocol practices, including that the Taiwan president only has a very limited refueling stops in the United States in transit elsewhere, that Taiwan senior visitors don't visit Washington, D.C., that there are only certain cabinet officers of the United States that can go to China. It's very elaborate and, of course, not written down, but nonetheless equally real to the Chinese.
Why is a phone call such a big deal when, if you look back just a year ago, the Obama administration announced a $1.83 billion arms sale package to Taiwan, frigates and anti-tank missiles and amphibious assault vehicles. Now, that seems like a much bigger deal than a phone call, or am I wrong?
Well, of course, if we look at it from our eyes, I think what you've described would strike almost every American as true. But unfortunately, we have to look at it through Chinese eyes. And when we President Carter normalized relations with Deng Xiaoping at that time, our ambassador in effect there, Leonard Woodcock, made absolutely sure that Deng Xiaoping understood the United States would continue to sell weapons to Taiwan. Deng Xiaoping said, "I will never agree to that, but nonetheless, I agree to proceed with normalization." And so this was part of the original deal weapon sales. But now we have a new president. We have in the United States soon. We have a relatively new leader in China who's trying to show the Chinese people that he stands up for their interests.
Xi Jinping, yeah.
Xi Jinping, and therefore, I think there's less patience on both sides. Trump brings his sort of pragmatic business can-do attitude to it, and Xi Jinping says, well, we had to 40 years ago agree to something we didn't like, but now we're stronger and we don't have to put up with it. As he put it, China will have more say. So you have two political systems that are produced two leaders that are each less patient with this elaborate dance that was developed 40 years ago.
There's exactly where I hope we can go. I mean, on the campaign trail, Donald Trump couldn't have been more flamboyant, outrageous, assertive. I mean, he said, you know, talked about China raping the U.S. in trade relations. That's a very strong word. Now, the Chinese foreign minister was downplaying this call to Taiwan. He accused Taiwan of playing a, quote, little trick on the American president-elect. But if that's not what this is, if Donald Trump is going to take a more assertive posture toward China, how far can that go? If Xi Jinping is thinking China doesn't have to put up with it, and Donald Trump is thinking, I'm going to, you know, put the pedal to the metal here or some greater degree of assertiveness, what gets illuminated if we get into some real chest bumping here?
Well, I think you have to everybody has to remember, both sides, that is in Beijing and Washington and our listeners, that China and the U.S. have a lot of cooperative interests or ways in which they need each other. And the managing the relationship is really balancing your priorities. So the first thing that we really need to figure out is what do we want from China most? And I think most people, and in fact even people in the Trump camp, say one of the big things we need from China is cooperation on the North Korea, building more and more missile delivery systems and more nuclear warheads. Others would say we need out of China a much more we need more reciprocity in trade, more fairness, more access for our corporations, particularly the service industry into China, and that's our priority. Others would say we need cooperation in the South China Sea to maintain freedom of navigation and stability. So if you believe that political resources by anybody, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, Xi Jinping, are limited, you sort of have to decide what you want more than what else. And where does a telephone call and upsetting all of this delicate dance that we've talked about, where does that fit on the priorities? And so I think the first obligation of a political leader, whether it's President-elect Trump or anybody else, is to make it clear what you want out of the relationship based on the fact that you're not going to get everything. And, of course, the Chinese are thinking about that. And I just – one last thought. And that really is Simon, in your previous segment, talked about a muted response, and that's true. But actually, muted response bothers me a little because the last time we had a similar event in 1995 when we granted a visa to the then Taiwan president, Li Denghui, the Chinese took their time and then fired missiles. And that response went on for a year, eventually resulted in America sending aircraft carriers. And so just the fact that we haven't in a week seen a response, that's encouraging as far as it goes, I suppose. But on the other hand, don't think that's the last word.
I mean, somewhere in its response, China said, you know, the U.S. may overestimate its strength relative to China's.
Well, yes. If you think when this arrangement was made around 40 years ago, China virtually had no navy worthy of the name, had virtually no air force, had virtually no capacity to reach offshore. It couldn't have invaded Taiwan if it had wanted to. Taiwan could have defended itself. But I think 40 years later, most people would say, basically, Taiwan couldn't even hold off a concerted Chinese attack for maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But that would – the U.S. would have to decide what it's going to do. So you're dealing with a much stronger China, not to mention that it's a major holder of treasury securities. It's our number two trade partner after Canada. We need their help on climate changes. They need our help, incidentally, and many other global issues, North Korea.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S.-China balance of power, this big relationship as a new administration heads for Washington. And Donald Trump talks on the phone with Taiwan. That got a lot of people's attention, foremost in Beijing. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Are you ready for a new relationship with China? A tougher, colder relationship? Is that a good idea? Does anybody have the upper hand here now? Could China have the upper hand? And what do you make of Beijing's warning that the U.S. may overestimate its own strength in this relationship these days? David Lampton is with us from Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, chairman of the Asia Foundation. Cheng Wang joins us in just a moment from Nanjing University, Nanjing, China, in the States these days. Just after Donald Trump's victory, the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, strongman himself, called, congratulated Donald Trump. Here's one of CCTV's, this is China state-owned television anchors, reading a statement put out by Xi about looking forward to more cooperation between the U.S. and China. Speaking in the words of Xi Jinping here, I highly value the relations between China and the U.S. I'm looking forward to working together with you to expand cooperation in every field, bilateral, regional, on the basis of the principles of non-conflict, non-confrontation, mutual respect, win-win cooperation, with differences controlled in a constructive manner. That's the way it's been. Where we go from here, not so sure. The call with Taiwan broke protocol. Here was Kellyanne Conway, Trump's very often spokesperson, saying, hey, let's calm down about this. There were 50 congratulatory calls, so he got one from Taiwan. Here she was.
Just as he said in the tweet, he gave billions of dollars in business with them, and all he did was receive a phone call. I think everybody should just calm down. He's aware of what our nation's policy is.
Just calm down, everybody. And here's John Bolton, George W. Bush's ambassador to the U.N., pretty fire-breathing foreign policy guy. One of those talked about as a potential Secretary of State for Donald Trump, speaking with Fox News on Saturday, saying, go for it.
It's important that people understand the president of the United States should talk to whomever he wants if he thinks it's in the interest of the United States. And nobody in Beijing gets to dictate who we talk to. My view has been for some time that we should be upgrading our relations with Taiwan. And I know that's going to cause heartburn in Beijing, but it's a reality.
David Lampton, please stand by there in Washington. Zheng Wang joins us in just a moment. We've got listeners in China and a caller right now from China in Shenzhen, China. Li is calling. Hi, Li. You're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. So this is just what I want to say, okay? I've been living here for over 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I see with my own eyes one way in which this culture is very, very different from the U.S., and we don't understand because we lack international perspective. This is a culture that is based on deception. What I mean by that, just to put it very quickly in perspective, just yesterday, right, I told a woman, and I do this all the time, anytime I have an opportunity, I tell them, you catch grandparents, you catch mothers, fathers, at a very, very early age, teaching their kids how to be deceptive.
Lee, I don't know about that, but what do you think about U.S.-China relations? How's it play out?
What it has to do with what's going on, and I'm not a Trump fan, okay, is our predictability is being used against us. This is the main problem. You know, you can have academia saying whatever they want to say, but when you know what the Americans are going to do based on American values, and you don't play by the same values. That's why we have lots of cyber espionage. We have, you know, advanced persistent threats. We have, you know, record data theft, intellectual property theft.
So in this case, Lee, you're in China, and you're saying you're for Donald Trump breaking protocol on Taiwan. I hear you say.
Second, Tom, do they worry about whether we're going to be offended before they hack us? Someone needs to be asking these questions. So I don't like Trump. I think it was, you know, on American voters' stupidity to put him there. I just happen to agree with this narrative that the president of the United States shouldn't have, you know, to pander to someone else's gung-ho nationalism.
Lee, we've got it. A call right there from China in Shenzhen. David Lampton, what about predictability and U.S.-China relations? Lee's in China and says, don't do it. You'll just be exploited. And that sounds like the Donald Trump line.
Well, I think the word that caught my attention in the caller's remarks was the word pander. Of course, you know, China's 20% of the world's people. So we have to take into account their response and at least take our actions and policy in light of what would be a predictable response and ask ourselves whether it's worth it and whether our interest is such to – and different people will have a different weight there. But I don't see – if you think there is a relationship between the United States and China, then you have to at least ask yourself how to manage it in your own interest.
But take up Lee's assertion that the U.S. is managing it in a naive way that is working against its net benefit.
Well, let me refer to – you had Mr. Bolton, a mm-hmm. clip from him just a minute ago, and mm-hmm. he said, quite frankly, he was up for upgrading relations. And I think one of the things they have to do when you manage policy is ask, the last time we did this, what happened?
You mean and upgrading in fact, with Taiwan in Beijing's face, in effect?
Yes. President Reagan came into office mm-hmm. in the early 80s, and in fact, his campaign plank as it pertained to China was upgrade relations with Taiwan. And what happened is we got in a year and a half negotiation, and then we ended up, President Reagan really quite contrary to his own will, signing a third communique called the August 1982 communique. And in that, we undertook to reduce our weapons sales. In fact, Reagan was so unhappy with this that he ended up really easing out Alexander Haig, that was his mm-hmm. secretary state who was seen as responsible for this. So all I'm saying is that we've actually been down this road. China's a lot stronger now than it was in the early 1980s. And so you have to ask yourself is, are we embarked in a self-defeating road? So I don't believe in pandering to China. I believe in trying to understand how they're likely to react. And then we have to ask ourselves, do we have the stomach for the reaction? If the answer is yes, and we have the capabilities to deliver, then that's one thing. But I think you have to take into account the likely reaction. And in this case, with what Mr. Bolton just said, we actually have had an almost exact instant replay of that.
We'll look at that. Do we have the stomach for the reaction? That's exactly where we're headed here. A couple more calls. Shirley in Mansfield, Ohio. Shirley, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm a long-time listener and a first time to getting on the air. Thank you so much for your program.
Thank you.
I just need to know, are we in for 4 years of this unpredictability with President-elect Donald Trump? Am I the only one at 67 years old have a fear when I go to bed at night, not knowing what the next day is going to bring? And the man is not even in the White House. Are we going to continue to go up against countries that we haven't dealt with in decades?
Surely, but Donald Trump says, I mean, unpredictability is part of his negotiating strategy. He wrote about it in The Art of the Deal, and he's basically asserting that that should be used to put America in a stronger position in different relationships.
And I understand that, but at this day and age, unpredictability is not good. We've come too far as a country. And we've done too many great things as a country and for other countries to start going backwards. And I'm just definitely afraid of what's going on here with China and Taiwan. And I just need to know, is this a start of something new that we're going to have to wake up every day and face and not know if we're going to live or die from a nuclear weapon? If somebody get ticked off, this is not little boys playing in the locker room and the ballpark.
I don't know who can answer that question definitively, but we can all look and see that Mr. Trump has embraced some degree of unpredictability as part of his kind of toolkit of negotiation. And I've got more calls on just that front. Shirley, I really appreciate yours first time. Don't make it the last. Marty in Austin, Texas. Marty, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I hate to pile on, but I do find this kind of endless surprise that this president-elect piles onto us each day to be exhausting. And I understand his negotiating tactics that he uses when he's building a building. But nowhere was it mentioned that relations with Taiwan would be somehow normalized or brought to the surface during the election. So suddenly we're faced with this. The world shifts its attention here. What will it be next week? This is no way to govern. It seems irresponsible, and it's all done via social media. It's all full of braggadocious sort of chest beating, and it doesn't feel like the America that I grew up in.
Marty, I appreciate your call. I got it. I'm sure you're not alone in feeling that way. On the other hand, Trump said on the campaign trail he wanted to mix things up. He didn't like the way things were going. Now, here we are. David Lampton, please stand by. With us right now from Basking Ridge, New Jersey, is Zheng Wang, a senior visiting fellow at the China Center for the South China Seas Studies at Nanjing University in Nanjing, China, global fellow at the Kissinger Institute on China and the U.S. at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Zheng Wang, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, hi, Tom. Glad to join you.
I'm very happy to have you. If Donald Trump is more unpredictable in his interactions with Beijing. We've just seen one example of that with Taiwan. If he continues to use that as a style of diplomacy, I guess, with Beijing, how might that work out, Zheng Wang?
I think China, just like Professor Lampton mentioned, that today's China is no longer the China 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. China's economy is over 20 times of, 25 years ago in 1989. It's a different China. And the bilateral relationship also developed very, fast. And for example, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, people may still say that the U.S.-China relationship is one of the most important bilateral relationship in the world. But today, I think more scholars will just say this is their most important bilateral relations. So I think it's very important for the two countries to get along with each other, because they got a lot of things they have to work together. There's a long list on these, you know, the things they need to cooperate with.
I agree there's a long list. Everyone can see the long list. But Mr. Trump has questioned the sort of fundamental balance of the relationship and has described it as exploitive of the United States and said, I want to reposition the U.S. vis-a-vis China, essentially, and want to change the balance of trade, perhaps, most fundamentally. Now, if he, you know, decides to turn over the tables a little bit in an effort to do that, how do you think Xi Jinping, the leader of China, might respond?
Yeah, actually, you will find these two leaders, the Chinese leader Xi Jinping and Mr. Trump, they are kind of, you know, they have some similarities. And actually, you know, if you, you know, the slogan of Trump's slogan during the campaign is Make America Great Again.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, President Xi Jinping has a very similar slogan, and he actually has used it for several years, which is what he called the Chinese Dream.
Yes.
It's the rejuvenation of the Chinese nation, which is, I think, is if you translate different ways, exactly Make China Great Again. And they both are nationalistic leaders. So, and actually today you will find that in Asia Pacific, it's not only two of them. You know, Prime Minister of Japan, Abe, and we can put Putin and India's Modi, and they are all kind of like a similar strong, powerful nationalistic leader.
Mm-hmm.
So when they get in the same room, I think people may have this kind of concern about the clash of nationalism, clash of dream. And also, but I think one point I want to mention is that I think the Chinese president and President-elect Trump, they actually also have a big common interest.
David Lampton, in his tweets that followed here, Donald Trump again threatened to bring big tariffs to bear against imports from China, 35%. I mean, that would be one strong, clear move to change the status quo. If he were to do that, what kind of reaction do you expect?
Well, I don't think we need to actually even speculate. The Chinese have already told us what will happen. They will target our biggest exporters to China. And China's exports from the United States to China are in excess of $120 billion. And they've said basically they're going to aim at various broad constituencies. 60% of American soybeans, that is a major crop between the Appalachians and the Rockies, those will be targeted. Of course, there's Apple, iPhones, major. They've said they'll target that. Boeing, 1 in 6 aircraft off the Boeing lines goes to China. They'll target that and up the ante with Airbus and so forth. So they've already said what they will do. Also, you have to really ask, won't this destabilize the international economy? You're talking – when you're talking about China and the United States, you're talking about the two engines of the world economy now. Japan's not doing well. Europe's not doing well. And so you can just imagine the market reaction to this kind of this is going to be a major concern. I wanted to just to say one thing about Shirley, the first caller.
Yes, who's afraid of what she's going to wake up to every
right,
morning.
Unpredictability.
Yes.
And I think that's really something to think about. Yes, there is negotiating advantage sometimes in unpredictability. Richard Nixon was a great practitioner of that. But on the other hand, this is a world in which actually markets need confidence, to proceed without great volatility. Long-term planning, people have to have strategic confidence in each other. Otherwise, you begin to find very defensive behavior. And I think one of the things that China's looking at in this process is that we have a president-elect who's no longer taking intelligence briefings, for instance, the daily presidential brief. He doesn't seem interested in the kind of careful staff work. In the end, of course, the president should decide, but he needs a staff behind him that makes sure he's aware of all of the problems. And we're seeing emerge a set of advisors for him that have had long-term commitment to changing the relationship with Taiwan. And I think that's what bothers China more than anything.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S.-China balance of power, the relationship, I guess. As a new administration heads into Washington and Donald Trump talks on the phone line with Taiwan, David Lampton is with us. He's director of China Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, chairman of the Asia Foundation, author of Following the Leader, Ruling China from Deng Xiaoping to Xi Jinping. Zheng Wang is with us. He's at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, the Kissinger Institute there on China and the United States, out of Nanjing University in China. You can join us this hour. What do you see developing during a Trump administration between these two countries? If it gets testy, who wins? Who loses? Has the U.S. been too accommodating or just realistic? Here was one of the early responses from China. This is the foreign minister, Wang Yi, commenting on that Donald Trump's phone call with the Taiwanese president, Tsai Ing-wen, saying, well, it was just a trick played by Taiwan on the U.S. Saying that the phone call is a small trick that Taiwan played. It will not impact the world's acceptance of the One China principle. I believe it won't impact the U.S. government's longstanding One China policy either. Henry Kissinger earlier had talked to Donald Trump. I don't know what he's thinking after the Taiwan call, but he met with Donald Trump and went on CNN on November 20th and talked about his reactions. When asked about how Trump would handle Sino-U.S. relations, Henry Kissinger said, give him a chance.
I think we should give him an opportunity to develop the positive objectives that he may have and to discuss those. And we've gone through too many decades of tearing incumbent administrations apart, and it may happen again.
Henry Kissinger, the architect of Richard Nixon's opening to China. David Lampton, Zheng Wang, lots of response online here. I mean, we've got listeners in Taiwan as well. Stephen says, from my perch in New Taipei, Taiwan's doing enough to destroy itself, especially environmentally. Okay, there's one of you. Shannon writes to us on Twitter, Americans can want to shake up Washington all they want, but international leaders want to know what to expect. Unpredictability is bad. And then there's this interesting Boston mom writes, Tom, I love you, but you're being too fair. Please hold this dangerous behavior accountable. Republicans would be going berserk if a Democrat was acting this way. There'd be hearings. This is nuts. Please, can we not normalize this? David Lampton, is it wrong to talk about a president-elect using this as a potential negotiating posture that deserves serious consideration? Should this be put outside the bounds of normalcy?
Well, I think you have to ask a very basic question, and that is one of your earlier callers said that this is not an equal relationship from the United States. And I would agree with part of the sentiment that we the Americans, need more reciprocity. We need more access to China for our media compared to what they have. We need more level playing field for our investments in China while they invest here. We need more help from them on the DPRK, that's North Korea, and the nuclear weapons problem there, because it's in both of our interests. So I think we have some legitimate bones to pick with Beijing. But Mr. Trump seems to have picked his leverage point to be the most sensitive sovereignty issue, which is Taiwan, which has always been the problem. And just imagine a foreign leader wanted certain things out of the President of the United States and tried to hold leverage that we wouldn't recognize California as part of the United States unless we gave in on some trade issue. I mean, we wouldn't even take that as a serious proposal. So I think the question is, what tools do we have to get a more fair and equal relationship? But you've got to pick the right tool. And this is not a credible tool. It's a very dangerous tool. We have some really shaky hands now trying to defuse a bomb.
It puts me in the mind of thinking back all the way to the 1950s and the Suez Crisis. Mm-hmm. And this is when Egypt nationalized the Suez Canal. The British and French had owned it and run it. And the British and French wanted to go to war, and they sent troops. Israel got involved with them. But the U.S., the new rising power after World War II, did not support that. And ultimately, the British, the old big power, had to stand down on this. Can you picture, David, some kind of incident between the U.S. and China under a Trump administration wherein the U.S. would be taught a big lesson somehow that it just had to take in front of the whole world, that our power was not of such scale anymore that we could tell China X, Y, or Z?
Well, I certainly could foresee such a possibility. And, of course, you have to think, where else are we engaged in the world militarily at the moment? And Syria limited, Iraq, Afghanistan, still some problems in Libya. We've got the problem with Russia in Europe. So what capacities do we have to resist, and what would be the costs of doing so? I would just say one other thing, mm-hmm. and that you raised about our allies, and in this case, the Suez back in the 50s. We have some experience with Taiwan in the mid-1990s with a president, Chen Shui-bian. And he decided to take risks. He thought with George W. Bush, he had a big friend in the White House mm-hmm. who would bail him out. He began to take provocative steps towards the mainland. The mainland began to react. And President Bush had to dress down and disassociate from Taiwan, actually fairly humiliating the Taiwan president, whom he was inclined to in other circumstances be sympathetic to. So I think the United States has to be very careful that its friends don't get us into unsustainable positions.
Is there a strategic pressure point you can pinpoint where China might decide to teach the U.S. a lesson?
Well, it's not just teaching the U.S. a lesson, although I mentioned the export industries the United States has, and China's already threatened those. But China might not immediately retaliate so much against the United States as Taiwan itself. For almost every multinational corporation mm-hmm. in the United States, indeed the world, China's the big growth market with a middle class. Mm-hmm. And China could simply force companies to choose to deal with them or to Taiwan, but not both. And so China has a lot of steps on the escalatory ladder that it can take with Taiwan to punish them, which the United States would be relatively ill-equipped to respond to. So the assumption that the first ones to feel the brunt would be the United States may be mistaken. Mm. It may well be that Taiwan is acting in ways that, while politically satisfying, are not in their long-term interests.
Mm. Richard in Leominster, Massachusetts. Richard, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd just like to say, the United States didn't become the United States by worrying too much about what other countries thought. We took on the British Empire.
Yes.
The United States didn't just come poof. The two-thirds said, there's the United States. Mm-hmm. They found out we could sail. We did whaling all around the world. We took them on. We took on the Germans and the Japanese. They're now some of our best allies. Mm-hmm. We put men on the moon. We put a rover on Mars the size of a Volkswagen. I believe the United States is a microcosm of the world. We have Chinese, Japanese, Germans. We can do quite a bit. We're very capable. We have Yankee ingenuity. And I don't think we can just tread in fear. I'm a wartime veteran in the American Legion, and I don't feel that we should be saying we have red lines and not backing them up, things like that. We lose our credibility. We should not be nasty to other countries, but we should not be walking in fear. I believe the United States should do for the United States. We're a very capable country. We carved this country out of the wilderness, and we basically, you know, we have that Yankee ingenuity.
What does that mean with China, Richard? Does that mean challenge China, provoke China to respond?
No, it doesn't mean to provoke them, but it means not to fear them also. If the president wants to take a call from anyone on earth, I kind of agree with John Bolton, and the president should be able to do that and not be very worried about it.
Richard, I appreciate your call. Cheng Wang, what do you say to that classic American perspective in many ways?
Yeah, I know that maybe many people, you know, thinking this way, but I just want to say for this phone call issue, the major, I think, concern people may have is actually, first, whether this new leader, lack, you know about his priority. Because, you know, if you are the leader of a big country, you have to know what your priority is. And whether, you know, for your priority is to challenge China, or even we talk about China, whether the Taiwan question is more important than the South China Sea and the North Korea, if the answer to each of these questions is no, then why reopening Taiwan? This has been, you know, the Taiwan question used to be one of the biggest headache for the bilateral relationship. But in the past 8 years, it's basically, it's peaceful. And it's good.
No,
we need to reactivate the Taiwan question at this particular moment is partially for Mr. Trump, and I believe his priority is many of the domestic issues. Just like I mentioned earlier, I think he has a common interest with Chinese President Xi Jinping, because for the Chinese president, his priority is also domestic politics.
To satisfy that nationalistic impulse, maybe.
Yeah, and also this year is also a power transition year for China, because China is going to have the 19th Party Congress.
Yes.
And the Chinese leader is also put a lot of thoughts mainly focused on the domestic issue and how to, you know, strengthen his power base. So I think these two leaders, they actually have, because the previous caller has also mentioned about negotiation, I think they can make a big deal. The deal is that they can both focus on their priority on the domestic issues and don't let the foreign policy issue, don't let this, you know, for example, the Taiwan question to be reactive and to switch the U.S.-China relations from the mode of cooperation to the mode of conflict. Because the conflict, if there's any, you know, conflict between these two countries, it will, you know, becomes the consequence is very difficult to predict. And it will use a lot of time and energy of the new leader. And this could be, you know, becomes an issue, becomes a barrier for him to really to be successful. So I think that this, I think that is the real concern for this phone call with Taiwanese leader, rather than, you know, we talked about whether United States should do, because any of the foreign policy issue or diplomatic decision and behavior, we have to evaluate and the context and the timing.
Of course. From collaboration to conflict, that would be a big switch indeed. Caller Matt is on the line. Hi, Matt. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Let me just start off by saying I did not support Donald Trump, and there are a lot of his policies that I do not agree with. However, I think I would say at this point that he's not unpredictable anymore. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at three calls that he's made over the last couple of weeks, one to the president of Pakistan.
Yeah.
Now we're discussing the call with Taiwan, and the same to Farage from Great Britain, who
the Brexit leader,
the architect behind the Brexit. I think it's signaling that look, you know, we're dealing with three of the largest economies that we're going to be forced to negotiate with: China, India and the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not, I'm essentially signaling that I'm willing to be friendly with some of your biggest adversaries, whether it's Taiwan, Pakistan, or India, or, say, someone who was the architect of the Brexit movement, to say, look, this is a new negotiating tactic, and I'm not afraid to essentially put aside years of diplomacy.
Yeah, really, really shake it up. Of course, you better know where that's going to go, or have some idea, or be able to contain where it goes. I mean, this isn't pinochle, but I got it, Matt, and it is interesting. You spot a very interesting pattern right there. Let me get one more from Urbana, Illinois. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to point out that statescraft and international relations are not the same as business deals. In a business deal, if you use unpredictability and it results in a failure of the business deal, the business deal fails. In international relationship, if the opponent misunderstands what you're doing, it may be war. That's very different. I would also point that it hasn't worked that well for Donald Trump in his business relationships. In the 1990s, Trump very nearly lost everything. And since that time, he has been so unpredictable that no one will make a deal with him unless he pays up front. And the consequence has been Donald Trump no longer builds buildings. He licenses his name.
Well, that's
a lot like...
That's true, David. That's true. He puts his name on them. I mean, our time is short here. David Lampton, let's say China wants to throw him a bone instead of get into, head bumping here. Is there something they could offer Donald Trump that would let him bring home a trophy to his voters to say, look, I got it, and now everything can settle down here?
Well, I think there are probably two domains, but the Chinese are not going to accept a linkage between what they claim is their sovereign territory and a deal, so it'll have to be subtler. But areas where we, I think, have pressing demands that would meet both American genuine interests and his political needs, I think it'd be in two areas. One is North Korea is engaged in a very dangerous proliferation of weapons, and we need China's greater assistance to deal with that, and I think maybe China's willing to talk about that. Also, we have close to an agreement on bilateral investment protection and market access to China. Trump could negotiate that with the Chinese. It's fairly close. He could put his imprint on it, and he'd have some economic progress to show the Americans. So I think he better start thinking creatively here.
Playing with fire. We'll see what comes of it. Maybe a deliberate tactic. Our callers point out a pattern. David Lampton, it's always great to have you with us from the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you.
And Jing Wang, a global fellow at the Kissinger Institute on China and the U.S. at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Jing Wang, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.